Chapter 5. Crossroads. They follow Solas along the shining path of the formless nothing for what seems like a long time. It flickered out of existence behind them and lit up ahead again. "The fade wasn't like this the last time I was here," Varric muttered. His voice had a deadened and muffled sound, as if they were still deep underground, rather than traveling through a vast and empty space. "That was the realm of the nightmare," Solas said without looking around. "Its nature was shaped by its lord."
"And whose realm is this? Is there a demon lord of boredom about to pop out from behind a cloud bank?"
Fenris glanced sideways automatically, but no such demon appeared. The clouds were brownish-gray and seemed to be made of nothing, and always slipped away from the light of the apostate's pathway. Only occasional pale flickers of light among the fog relieved the dullness of the place.
"I don't think there's anyone here at all," Meryl said. "It feels empty."
"You are correct," said Solas. "No spirit rules this part of the Fade. Few willingly come here."
"Those lights?" said Fenris.
"Wisps. The weak, the helpless, the forgotten. Greater spirits have pushed them aside, and so they would congregate along the road."
Where they found the memories of the murdered slaves, Fenris thought. Where they whispered the bitterness of the helpless through the ragged veil. He focused his gaze on his own feet and tried not to look at the firefly gleams.
"It is a dark place," Solas said. "Blighted, if not in the most literal sense of the term. We will meet nothing capable of real thought here, let alone speech."
"Well, if we don't meet any demons on our way, that's fine with me," Varric said.
Time stretched. The emptiness of the Fade made it impossible to tell how far they had come. The only landmark in that entire formless realm had been the Magister's Gate, and once it was lost to view, there was no way to mark their journey. Fenris continued to watch Solas narrowly. He told himself he was simply being careful. It had not escaped his notice that once they could no longer see the Black Gate, there was no real way to tell which direction it lay in. This apostate had them at his mercy if he chose. He did not understand their quest. He had never loved Hawk. But Solas did nothing worthy of comment, unless it was suspicious to smile a little at Varric's jokes. Meryl tried two or three times to begin a conversation about elves, magic, or the orb, but he brushed her off each time. Firmly, if not rudely. Fenris did not speak to him. He kept his guard up and watched. At last, a single landmark came into view. Standing tall in the far, foggy distance was a tower. It was impossibly tall and slender, brittle-looking. Its turrets went off into unnatural curving shapes that eventually spread wide into something almost like the branches of a tree. White gold banners hung from the arches and crisscrossed stonework. They snapped and fluttered in a breeze that was not there. Fenris squinted for the heraldry as they drew closer to the base of the strange building, but it was impossible to make out. The eyes slid away from it, or else it seemed to change under one's gaze.
"So, who lives here?" Varric said.
"No one we want to meet, I take it." "On the contrary," said Solas, "that is our way forward."
"I thought we were looking for the dreams of the Sundermount. I don't see a mountain anywhere."
"To the denizens of the Fade, a mountain is merely a metaphor," Solas said. "That tower is the realm I spoke of. It contains many portals and the beginnings of many pathways."
Varric tipped his head back to look up at it. Fenris glanced up as well. It was impossible to make out the tower's height. The spreading tangle of stonework far above seemed to stretch forever, and in all directions. The banners fluttered.
though many of them were hanging in the wrong directions, as if they thought the ground lay above or off to the side. For a moment, he heard birdsong and smelled a scent he did not recognize. Meryl breathed deep.
"Oh, a real forest," she said. "That's lovely."
There was one door at the tower's base, and it was made of the same white stone as the rest of the building, and it was closed. It had neither a handle nor keyhole.
"So," said Varric, "how do we get in?"
Solas paused. He said, "breaking in through this entrance will not be easy, and the moment we pass through the door, this realm's master will know of our presence." Meryl said,
"Why don't we knock?"
They all looked at her.
"I don't know if that's a good idea, Daisy," Varric said.
"Why not?
It's polite," said Meryl. "People always knock when they come into my house."
She thought about this.
"Except for the ones who want to kill me. They don't knock. Oh, and Hawk. Hawk never knocks. He just walks in."
"Whether you invite him or not," Fenris said.
Hawk had walked into his Hightown mansion on all sorts of occasions, at all kinds of times. In the middle of the night, as often as not. He had interrupted friendly conversations, drinking sessions, black rages, bouts of humiliating self-pity, as if he had every right, just by existing, to claim a place for himself in Fenris's life.
Solas raised his eyebrows. He appeared to be considering Meryl's suggestion seriously. "I do not know which spirit rules this place," he said. "It is much contested territory. We may regret drawing its attention."
"We can't avoid drawing its attention," said Varric. "Not every spirit is a demon. Just look at Cole. If being polite might stop it getting angry with us, I say we do it."
No one spoke up in disagreement, but none of them moved. Meryl looked at Varric and opened her mouth, perhaps to ask who this Cole was, but then shut it again with a click. They looked at the door. It did not change. The white gold banners fluttered in the stony branches far overhead. Finally, Fenris could bear it no longer. He snapped a curse into Veen and stepped forward. No one moved to stop him. He rapped sharply on the door with his knuckles. The white stone surface was smooth as porcelain. The sound of the knock echoed. Nothing happened.
"So much for that idea," said Varric at last. "Solas, got anything, or should we?"
The door swung open. In the same instant, there was a terrible creaking and groaning above them, like a ship protesting in the height of a tempest. Fenris looked up just in time to see the entire impossible edifice of arches and turrets shudder. It was as if the mad, fayed architecture had remembered, all at once, that down was a direction with meaning. When the tottering towers began to plummet, there was not time to even think of trying to dodge. Fenris looked around, confused. He had a bizarre, distracted feeling, as if something important had just been happening. He shook out his shoulders, stretched, and felt strange about it for a moment. Then he had to laugh at himself. There was nothing strange about having enough room to stretch.
"Copper for your thoughts?" said Hawk.
"Hmm?"
Hawk shrugged.
"Nice to see you smile. Share the joke if you've got one. I could use a joke or two."
Fenris paused. It was mid-afternoon. The Wycombe Road was wide and clear, well-paved. Tangled, flowering bushes grew on either side, with occasional verdant patches of elfroot. Somewhere a bird sang.
"I don't remember," he said eventually. "A passing thought."
"Shame," Hawk said, but the corner of his mouth quirked in a smile nonetheless.
His fingers brushed Fenris's forearm. It might have been an accident.
"Come on, not far now."
There were barriers and checkpoints set up at the crossroads outside the city. Fenris frowned at them. They had a slapdash, shoddy look, as if they had been built in a hurry. The soldiers manning them wore the colors of Wycombe's Duke and looked as if they would rather have been anywhere else. There was a group of refugees arguing with their captain. Fenris and Hawk came to a halt at the back of the group.
"Wait," Fenris said, holding out a hand without looking.
Hawk's breastplate bumped against his fingers.
"According to the Duke's orders," the captain shouted desperately over the uproar, "all travelers on the Kirkwall Road are to be prevented from entering the city until...
"Until what?"
"Well,
you don't know."
"Until someone finds out what the hell is going on in Kirkwall,"
shouted a man in civilian clothes behind the barriers.
"We've heard the stories. Apostates, demons, abominations, the circle gone mad, the chantry destroyed. We don't want any of that here, thank you."
"Good," said the leader of the refugees. "That's what we're trying to get away from."
"Can you prove that you're not a rebel mage in disguise?"
"Sure. Abracadabra. Look, you're not dead. Let us in."
"You didn't do any magic."
"Of course I didn't do any magic. I'm not a sodding mage. Do you even know what a mage looks like?"
"A mage can look like anyone," the captain bawled back. "That's the whole point."
"Well, this looks like a great party," said Hawk under his breath. "Wycombe doesn't seem very warm and welcoming, does it?"
"You might say it lacks Kirkwall's native charm," said Fenris.
Hawk's lips twitched.
"No giant prison, no screaming statues, no horrible Templars. It's like they're not even trying. I say we just back away slowly and pretend we were never here."
They began to do so, carefully. Two armed strangers turning and running would certainly draw attention.
"Just an ordinary pair of travelers sauntering by,"
Hawk said airily, as if it were normal conversation.
"On our completely innocent way to somewhere. Nothing to see here."
"Him!"
Hawk winced.
"Over there! That's the champion of Kirkwall! He's a mage! Everyone knows he's a mage!"
Hawk met Fenris's eyes.
"Well," he said ruefully, "it was worth a try."
Fenris shook his head.
"Now I guess we get to talk our way out."
"Or try," said Fenris. He was already seeing how the fight would go. The Wycombe soldiers looked incompetent, and the refugees were mostly unarmed. If Hawk stunned them, they might get away without bloodshed. All the Kirkwall refugees were staring at them now, and murmuring to each other. Fenris heard the word champion repeated several times. The Wycombe guards, too, were staring from behind their barricades. As many of them goggled at Fenris's peculiar appearance as were gaping at Hawk.
"Which one is he?"
one of them whispered loudly. Fenris took a careful, pointed pace backwards and positioned himself behind Hawk's shoulder. The guard captain looked relieved at this evidence for which one of them to talk to.
"Sir Mage," he said. "That is your championess."
Fenris was close enough to Hawk that he was aware of the tremor that went through him as he tried not to laugh. I don't want to be rude, but..."
"Is it true he blew up your chantry?"
the whispering guard was asking a refugee.
"I heard that was an abomination."
"Wait, your champion's an abomination?"
"Well, he's not our champion anymore, is he?"
"Please, sirrah," said Hawk. "Don't let me trouble you."
A chink and flash, gold changing hands. "We were just leaving."
"Going where?" said the guard captain.
"Not to Wycombe, and isn't that what really matters?"
Hawk said. He passed the man another gold piece. He was dipping deep into the limited funds they had now.
"As a matter of fact, we're on our way to..."
he stumbled.
"Thernfall Redoubt," said Fenris.
It was the first thing that came to his head. A name from the books of chantry history he read with Hawk. It was fortunate, he supposed, afterwards, that he had not blurted Minrathis.
They're in Vol Redoubt?
Hawk mouthed incredulously. But then he shrugged.
Yes, they're in Vol Redoubt. I am, as these good people have helpfully pointed out, a mage. And under the circumstances, I thought I'd better go, turn myself into the Templars.
Why didn't you do that in Kirkwall?
I tried, said Hawk piously. Knight Commander Meredith was very unreasonable about the whole thing, and then she turned into a Lyrium statue, which I still think was uncalled for. I thought I'd better tell the Templars about that, too. So, I'll just be on my way.
The flash of coin was silver now, and Fenris rather thought Hawk had already given the man all their gold.
If you'll excuse me.
Hold it right there.
And there goes talking our way out, said Hawk.
You tried, Fenris said.
Looks like I was wrong about the lack of horrible Templars, too.
A broad-shouldered human woman with dark skin and cold eyes was advancing on them. She wore Templar armor. So did the squadron of heavily armed knights behind her. The refugees prudently backed away from the barricades. Knight Commander Yesselt, said the guard captain in relief. We have begun a purge of the rebels. All mages are taken into custody, said the commander. By, whose order? By mine, Yesselt said. She passed the man a scroll. Countersigned, if it makes you feel better, by His Grace the Duke. But authority over defiant mages remains where it has always been, with the Templars. She drew her blade with a ringing sound. It gleamed blue with enchantments. I know who you are, Sarah Hawk, she said. The Seekers of Truth are looking for you. There are too many Templars here for one mage to defeat alone. You had better make this easy on yourself.
And you'll, what, give me a nice guest room with a lovely view of the gardens?
The circle in Wycombe does have a pleasant view, said Yesselt. But I doubt you'll care. The Seekers can interrogate a Tranquil just as easily as they can interrogate a mage. Hawk stepped back. His shoulder bumped Fenris's. You can't do that, he said. Oh, yes, I can, Yesselt said. Apostate, rebel, and a battle mage to boot? Hardly someone who uses magic safely. A mercenary and hired killer. A man who consorts as a matter of course with blood mages and abominations. I said I know who you were, champion.
I have to admit, said Hawk, when you put it like that, it does sound bad.
He slung his staff off his back. Fenris drew his sword. This was madness. There were two of them and a full squadron of Templars. Yesselt alone looked to be a deadly foe.
Look, this is stupid. I don't want to fight you. You know perfectly well you can't go around making people tranquil for no reason. Just look at where that got Meredith. You can't...
Hey, said the guard captain. Does this say you're making all of them tranquil? The whole Wycombe Circle? A preemptive measure for the safety of the city, said Yesselt. Agreed between myself and the Duke. Well, said the captain. He wore a broad, relieved smile. About time. Hawk's mouth opened in simple shock. Fenris could not look at him. It was nothing he had not suggested himself, now and again, in bitter moments, or to needle the abomination during an evening at the Hanged Man. He had fully believed he meant it at the time. There was a simple way to prevent mages from doing any damage to those around them. Merciful. He had believed he meant it. He had meant it. He still meant it, but... The look on Hawk's face. Hawk was gaping at Yesselt. For the first time in his life, it seemed he could not find the words. Are you out of your mind? He managed at last. This is a war, snapped Yesselt. Oh, sure. At least it is now. Do you think your mages are just going to sit there and let you? If this rebellion spreads further than Kirkwall, Maker's Breath, if it spreads further than Kirkwall, it'll be because you're spreading it. At least Meredith had an excuse. Meredith had lyrium poisoning.
A hawk? Said Fenris.
The squadron of Templars had moved quickly. The guard captain and his men had been pushed back. The refugees were well out of the way. Hawk and Fenris were surrounded by a circle of polished steel.
Oh, said Hawk quietly.
Oh, hell. He didn't take his eyes off Yeselt. You have to see this is crazy, he said. It's going to make everything worse. I have nothing to say to your kind, rebel, said Yeselt. She looked at Fenris. Her eyes lingered on the red cloth wrapped around his wrist. You are no mage, elf, she said. You would do better to stand aside. If you defend him, we will kill you. Fenris met her cold gaze and said nothing. He had already chosen. He had chosen Hawk at the gallows. It had been impossible, mad, and he had done it. There was no going back. He would choose Hawk forever.
She's right, Fenris, said Hawk, making him startle. You don't need to be a part of this.
Then Fenris looked away from Yeselt.
You would say that to me, he said. Now?
Hawk did not meet his eyes.
They will not hurt you, Fenris told him. I have told you. I will not let them.
Then, said Hawk,
then don't let them take me alive.
Fenris flinched.
I cannot promise that.
You have to, Hawk said. I mean it. I'd rather be dead than tranquil.
Enough of this prattling, said Yeselt. Templars, take this apostate prisoner.
White light bloomed from all directions, the Templars' mana-sapping powers. Hawk went to one knee, gritted his teeth, planted the butt of his staff in the ground, and dragged himself back to his feet. He would be helpless, Fenris thought, until there were far fewer Templars.
So be it.
6 Templars in Yeselt's squadron. The first did not expect a ghostly hand reaching through his armor and skin and ribcage for his heart. He gurgled on his scream as he died. The second was equally surprised. So was the third. Speed was of the essence. By the time Fenris turned to the 4th and 5th, they were on their guard, dodging away. The rigors of Templar training showed in how quickly such heavily armed men could move. But one of them made the error of worrying too much about Fenris's lyrium-marked hands and not enough about his sword. He fell heavily under a pommel blow, and the dent in his helmet meant he was not likely to get up again. 2 remaining. 3, if you counted Yeselt. There were no longer enough of them to effectively neutralize Hawk. Fenris felt his markings thrill to the rising power in the air as Hawk gathered strength for the fire and lightning he controlled so well. Of the Templars, Yeselt alone was blazing with the steady bursts of white light that were her mana-draining abilities. The other 2 lacked her power and focus. Fenris left them for Hawk to pick off. Yeselt was the threat. It was Yeselt he turned to.
I said I would kill you, elf, she said calmly. I meant it.
Fenris shouted a war cry and lunged at her. The duel was a blur of steel and rage and white light. From his markings, from her power, her blade had all the force promised by those broad shoulders behind it, as well as wicked and deadly speed. She...
Fenris!
Then the world was dark for a time.
Make her know,
he heard eventually. It might have been any amount of time later.
Come on, Fenris, don't do this to me. You know I'm a useless healer. Please.
And again, more quietly.
Please.
Sir Champion, said a girl's voice. My mother said, you can have these for your friend, if it helps. They're from Lady Elegance.
Bless you, said Hawk.
Tell her thank you, with all my heart. Here, Fenris. Fenris twisted his face against the taste. The strongest cultivators of elf fruit were the bitterest.
Don't give me that, you idiot, Hawk said.
There was a choke of laughter in his voice.
Drink!
Fenris opened his eyes to Hawk's upside-down face above him. He was lying on the side of the road. His head was in Hawk's lap.
I can't believe you did that,
Hawk said, but his hands were gentle in Fenris's hair. You really ought to be dead right now. Fenris coughed a couple of times and tried to ask a question. No, don't, Hawk said. The Templars? Well, Yesult's dead. He looked wry. And I think the rest of them have bigger problems. Someone ran and told Wycombe's Circle what the plan was. There's a pitched battle breaking out in the city right now.
Oh, Fenris managed. He closed his eyes. We should not...
Stay here, Hawk finished for him. No, it isn't safe, he added softly. Nowhere's safe. Fenris slept. He felt somewhat recovered when he woke in the morning. Elegant's potion had done its work in the night. They had camped, it seemed, among the Kirkwall refugees, by the abandoned checkpoint at the crossroads. Someone had dragged the bodies of the dead Templars into a neat pile off to the side. No one had stolen their armor yet, though it was no doubt only a matter of time. They would have a hard time retrieving anything of value from Yesult's corpse. It was charred beyond recognition. The steel plate melted onto the skin. Smoke was rising from the walls of Wycombe. Hawk was nowhere to be seen. None of the refugees knew where he had gone. Fenris felt a momentary lurch of panic in his stomach when he realized. It was only relieved when he spotted the familiar silhouette standing on a low rise that overlooked the crossroads. Hawk, he said when he drew near. Hawk turned and smiled at him. Morning, he said. Ready to get going? To wherever we're going?
Anywhere, said Fenris. So long as you are there.
Hawk's smile broadened, and he stepped in, and then in again, and Fenris did not back away. They were chest to chest, and then Hawk ducked his head a little. The first kiss missed Fenris's lips and landed on his cheek. Fenris laughed, low, and pulled Hawk in properly with hands in his hair. His mouth was warm, his lips a little chapped, his beard prickled. He breathed Fenris's name when they broke apart. He was not smiling now, but his eyes were bright. I want to do that all the time, he said.
Wait, said Fenris.
What is it?
A moment. I simply...
Something was nagging at the edges of his attention. There was some memory. Something was not...
Hawk, Fenris said when he drew him near.
Hawk turned and smiled at him.
There you are, he said. I wanted to say goodbye.
Fenris stopped short.
Goodbye, he repeated.
Had he misheard? He could not have misheard.
Seems like the right time for it, Hawk said.
I think the champion of Kirkwall needs to disappear for a while, and we make a pretty recognizable pair. Safer to split up here. Fenris nodded numbly, even as understanding crashed down onto him. Every time he thought he knew every last twist of the curse his markings inflicted on him, a new one appeared. Recognizable. He was recognizable, undoubtedly. Infinitely recognizable.
I do not care about my safety, he blurted.
Hawk raised his eyebrows. Well, maybe I care about mine, he said.
Please, said Fenris, all in a rush. I beg of you, you were the most important thing in the world to me. Do not send me away.
There was a moment of quiet. Finally, Hawk laughed. It was not the easy, good, and humored laugh, but the uncomfortable one that meant he was laughing at himself.
Twist my arm, why don't you?
He said. He looked at Fenris.
If it means so much to you, he began.
His words were mocking, but the look in his eyes said something else. Fenris breathed out in terrible relief, feeling the precipice receding from his feet. Then he frowned.
Something. I do not care about my safety, Fenris blurted.
Hawk raised his eyebrows. Well, maybe I care about mine, he said.
Fenris nearly said more, nearly humiliated himself with pleading, but he bit his tongue at the last moment. There was nothing more to say. Hawk had made up his mind. There was no use in dragging this out into a shameful scene. "Well," he said instead, "you are not wrong. Parting would indeed be the prudent course."
"You know me," said Hawk. "Prudent."
Fenris gave him a look.
"Don't say it," Hawk said.
He held out his hand and Fenris took it. Hawk's grip was firm and warm, and then it was done.
"Oh," he said, "I'd better..."
He nodded at the strip of red cloth wrapped around Fenris's wrist. The Hawk crest. Fenris tried not to make a show of his reluctance as he unwrapped the cloth. His wrist felt naked without it. Hawk tucked the red scrap into a pocket.
"Well, goodbye then," he said.
"Good luck. Don't pick any fights with Knight Commanders without me."
"Without you, there is no reason to," Fenris said.
"I guess that's true," said Hawk.
For a moment, Fenris thought he was about to say something else. But then he only laughed and shook his head and turned away. And then he was gone, and Fenris was alone. Alone for months on end. They were months which he filled with good and necessary work, with hunting slavers across the marches, doing what really mattered, hardly letting himself even think of Hawk. Hawk, who had made himself perfectly clear. Until the letter from Skyhold arrived.
"We could use you," Varric wrote.
He did not mention Hawk, but when Fenris trudged along the bridge into Skyhold in the depths of winter, when he ducked into the Herald's Rest and looked around, Hawk was at the bar. Fenris recognized him at once, even before he heard him laugh. And then, when Hawk felt his stare and turned around, his eyes said everything, said it all.
"But," Fenris said.
Alone, for months on end, until the letter from Skyhold arrived, and Varric's dire news. Only then did Fenris realize the depths of his error. But he did not give up. He never gave up. And it was worth it in the end, when they found Hawk wandering in the Fade, haggard, wild-eyed, but alive. Hawk looked at Fenris and said, "I knew you would come, and..." "Enough!" Fenris shouted. "No more lies!" Everything stopped. The wild-eyed illusion of Hawk melted into nothingness, as did the dark, formless shapes of the Fade realm he had been wandering in. They were replaced by four smooth white walls. There was no sign of Varric or Merrill or Solas. Exactly where Hawk had been standing was a familiar figure. She had Isabella's hip-cocked stance and Isabella's face and Isabella's daggers at her belt, but her eyes glowed a pale, unearthly red.
"Are you always this hard to please?"
the Desire Demon said in Isabella's voice.
"No wonder he dumped you!"